This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundbox, the magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland.
Hello. And welcome to Soundblast, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's iPod, the totally non-visual magazine. I'm Sandy Simpson, and I'm right here in Bowness in central Scotland with the indefatigable David Bytheway, the editor, producer and roving reporter for Soundblast.
Well, we start with the general strike. The general strike of 1926 still evokes bitter memories, especially in the industrial coalfields of Fife. But it was Bowness, which was the scene of angry clashes between pickets and the non-striking railwaymen for the filming of The Happy Lands. Our ever-willing roving reporter David Bytheway was in the thick of things, and should not be the picket of things. Anyway, David Bytheway.
Well, with me now is Robert Ray, who's the director of the film here. Robert, what actually are you doing here today at Bowness?
Well, we're filming... It's a film about 1926, set in Fife, just across the water there. And it's about a village, an imaginary village in Fife called Car Hill. And it's a film, it's a feature film, but it's uniquely, it's being created by and is acted by the community, from the mining community in Fife. And we've spent the last 2 years collecting stories and tales about what happened in 1926 from folk memory and from records and that, and we've created this piece which tells the story of the Fife miners in 1926.
What scenes have you been shooting here today?
And shooting here today, it's during the general strike, and the railway workers are solid with the miners, but there is a couple of a student has come down from St Andrews, and he's managed to persuade one of the train drivers to take the train out, and so the pickets have been chasing the train across the line, actually trying to stop them getting the train out. So effectively, that's what's...
Sounds good fun, but can it be dangerous?
From what point? From the real world, or from the imaginary world of the film? Imaginary world of the film. Well, the safety people here are very good, and of course, it's being a kind of feature film, we're very safety conscious ourselves. So,
how many people have you got here?
Well, it's in the kind of company, in terms of the acting company. They're not here today, but there's about 135 altogether. I suppose there's about 40 or 50 actors here. And then on top of that, there's about 40 crew here, yeah, in putting it all together.
Now, you're the director, so have the final say, don't you? Are you happy with what you've got here today?
Yeah, it's been great. And they've really looked after us. And you can see that they're quite experienced with film crews. And
what about the pictures? How do they look?
They look good, yeah. They look really good, yeah. It looks... what you can tell, I mean, our kind of anxiety is we've got to hopefully edit it all together, and it makes sense. It's quite complicated geography because it's actually somebody standing in front of the train and holding up a picket sign and the train screeching to a halt. So there's various bits of it we've had to do backwards, so we'll be interested to hope that it all cuts together so it looks like the train is arriving at the note of our kind of brave but foolhardy picket who stands in front of it.
We're rolling, and 3, 2, 1, action.
Well, I'm on the footplate of Brave Riach, and with me now is Robbie Marshall. And you had a star role today, didn't you?
Yes, we had to play the role of the student driver who was brought in to cover the mining staffs on the strikes. And we had to sort of drive the train in the outfit of a 1920s student.
Yes, I see you're looking a bit 1920s. Describe your costume there.
Well, I've got the waistcoat and the shirt and tie, and the old stripy trousers. Bit out of fashion now, but
you think it'll ever come back?
Not anytime soon, no.
But driving is almost second nature to you, isn't it?
It is almost, yes.
You passed out last week, wasn't that right?
Yes, last week passed out as a fireman, so yeah.
And that makes you the youngest fireman down here, doesn't it?
It is at the moment, yep.
How old are you?
17.
So. That's quite an achievement, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So what is it about steam that you find so interesting?
There's just something about, they've got their own nature and, you know, they've got their own personality. It's not like the diesels, it's always the same.
Well, with me now is Archie King from Cowdenbeath and Fife, who's one of the extras on the film. Archie, how did you get on into this?
It was basically through my niece, Fiona Jackson, who had just started with TWS, that's Theatre Workshop Scotland, based in Edinburgh. And she left a flyer actually at my mum's house. So visiting mum's one afternoon, there was a flyer. Have you ever fancied being in a movie? Well, now you can. And it was just basically a phone call and... The rest was just, well, as you could see, history, can you say.
But what did you have to do? You have been an actor before?
No, never been an actor, no. I think each and everybody is an actor in some sense or another. But I think this was just an opportunity to, how can you say, I don't know what's the right word to say there on that.
Just enjoy it, a part of history.
Yeah, just a part of history, yeah.
Here comes Bray Rioch now, the train which you've been attacking, haven't you?
That's correct. We've been chasing the train driver. He was a scab.
And you're all the National Union of Miners?
Yeah, miners, yes, yes.
What was the situation like in Fife at the time, do you know?
Oh, it's pretty bleak, pretty dire. Just basically just to keep the working class people, you know, just to keep them, how can I say, yeah, just to keep them down, basically. Yeah.
And you enjoyed your day at Bowness?
The day in Bowness has been absolutely fantastic. And we've been most welcomed everywhere.
When can we expect to see it?
Well, we hope you'll be able to see it in... Well, it's going to be sort of premiered next May, and then it's the BBC will screen it at some point. It'll hopefully get a bit of a theatrical release and do all the festivals and do all that. And then, so I'm not sure when the BBC will screen it, but probably in the autumn sometime of next year.
The world is turning, telling me to hurry on.
Well, there's another film crew down at Bowness today, and Ruby McConaughey, you're kind of in charge of this. But this one's different. You've got music as well as action. What are you actually doing here?
We're singing a song called Taking My Time, and you said I'm in charge. I'd like to think I am, but I think there's an awful lot of bosses around here today. But we're having a lovely time, and we're doing a DVD all around Scotland. It's called A Year with Crystal Clear, and doing spring, summer, autumn and winter, and this is our summer session.
This is a gospel song, isn't it?
It is a gospel song. There's a gospel theme, but we have very serious ones through the DVD as well. But we also have what we call our fun songs. And this is about not being in a hurry, we're taking our time, but come on, hurry up. You know, it's a good song.
Sure.
That God's in charge of everything and he'll see us all right.
Sure, sure. But it's rather different from the other film units we've seen here, because you've got a big playback machine here and then one of your actresses mimes to it. Is that how it's done?
Yes, well, she actually is singing, but obviously what's going to come out in the DVD is what's been pre-recorded to get a bit of perfection, because it wouldn't be very suitable to be trying to sing with all the noise going round about. So that's why we do it that way.
Why do you come to Bowness?
Because of the train. Because of the train, the attraction, that we have my little grandson Matthew, and we have my niece Yvonne's little son Jack, and they've been up to see the Thomas tank. So this brought the attraction, and I just thought it'd be lovely to have one of our songs in a train.
As well as railways, the Society also plays host to vintage road vehicles. More than 50 vintage vehicles attended the Father's Day Rally, organised by Charlie Reid earlier this year, and David, by the way, small child that he still is, found fire engines.
Well, this is the vehicle rally on Father's Day here at Bowness, and I've come across John Fenton, who's here with two fire engines. John, what's this one, first of all? Sounds healthy. What we've got here?
This, David, is a 1961 Land Rover Firefly fire appliance. It spent most of its life, or the bottom part of the vehicle, spent most of his life converted to an emergency rescue tender at Stirling Fire Station in the late 60s. The vehicle, as we see it at the present time, is actually made out of four similar types of vehicles, which when they were made redundant from Central Area Fire Brigade back in the early 1980s, were brought together by a group of enthusiasts, the Preservation Group in these days, and we made the vehicle, as you see it now almost, out of three Land Rovers, cannibalising it. We then set off for a large fire engine rally with the vehicle on a trailer, and unfortunately it came off the trailer on the motorway and rolled, caused severe damage. So the vehicle, as you see it now, in actual fact, was made out of with parts of a fourth Land Rover, which luckily we were able to get, and with help from specialist coach builders, it was put back together and is as original as it would have been when it came out of the factory down in London in 1961.
You used to drive this when it was at Stirling.
That is indeed correct. I drove this as a fireman at Stirling in the late 1960s when it was the emergency rescue tender, and it's hard to believe now, but we used to fit three of us into the front cab there as the crew, and I had road accidents with this particular vehicle.
Did it do the business?
It did. I mean, it had limited amounts of cutting equipment on it, and indeed it only lasted some 3 to 4 years before it was replaced with a larger vehicle, and has now been replaced with an even bigger vehicle, which is possibly carrying maybe 6 or 7 times more equipment than was carried on the original one.
Let's go across to the other vehicle you've got here. It's not red, that's the first thing we should say. It's painted green. It's a green goddess, isn't it?
Yes. Now,
it's different from the other fire engines that we've seen. What's so special about this one?
Well, the Green Goddesses were brought in by the government back in the 1950s with the threat of a Third World War and nuclear problems that could arise from, obviously, the radiation following a bombing attack. So the concept was that we would require large amounts of water for decontamination purposes for the radiation risk that might occur. And the idea was to commission, basically on a bus chassis, a Bedford bus chassis. They were made by some 6 different manufacturers to the same specification, and it became known as the Green Goddess. They were made in either 4x2 configuration or this one here, which is a 4x4, all-wheel drive. They carried 300 gallons of water, or roughly 1,200 odd litres. They did carry some firefighting equipment on them as well, but basically the whole concept was to provide an overground water main by putting these vehicles in line so that they could transfer large amounts of water, 1,000 gallons a minute, in line and actually pump for miles and miles, if necessary, from an open water supply.
The two vehicles look quite magnificent here. What's the point of preservation? Where do you want to save them?
Well, in actual fact, they are. They're history, aren't they? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. If you look at these, the main idea of having these vehicles preserved is so that we can actually show them up against the conventional vehicles of this century as compared with the 50 years ago. And you can actually see how things have progressed in the fire service, now fire and rescue service, and in actual fact, it's a good to be able to draw the comparison between old and new. And basically so that all the youngsters that are coming on and all the people who grew up with these vehicles can actually see, and we've preserved them and we try to keep them as authentic as possible.
Well, I've left the fire engines now and I've come across to a 1950 Bentley, and Stuart Townsend is the proud owner of this. Stuart, it looks like every schoolboy's dream, isn't it? It's an open top, almost a racing car, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I've had this for about 10 years. Took me 9 years to restore it. Originally had a standard steel body on it which had rotted away, so I took it off and took it right down to the bare chassis and rebuilt it with an open touring body. And yes, it is a lovely car, and I've only just started driving it and hope to do a few more events shortly.
Describe it to me. I've just said it's an open topper and it's got catches to keep the bonnet down. It's a two-seater, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a two-seater. Originally it was a four-seater with a standard steel body. I've made it more look like a vintage Bentley.
Why did you do this? What was the driving force? What drove you to do this?
My dad was very friendly with the very first person who built a Bentley Special, so I knew a little bit about them, and I always wanted to build something like this, whether it be a kit car, but this was more interesting as it, you know, being an older car, and I could turn it into what looks like a racing sports mm-hmm. car.
What's the mileage you get to this?
To be honest, I couldn't honestly tell you, but I would imagine it would be down between 15 to 18 miles per gallon.
And the top speed?
Top speed, originally on these cars, they could do over 100 miles an hour, and it's a lot lighter, so there's no reason why it couldn't do a bit more.
But you haven't heard it up to
No, of course not.
Keep to the speed limit.
Yeah.
How do you go about tax and insurance in these machines?
Well, it's like any old car. It goes through an MOT like any other car. It's all road legal. It's tax exempt because of its age, so you don't have to pay any tax. The insurance isn't dear because it's a classic car and it's limited mileage. I'm not doing a lot of miles with it.
Mm-hmm. You don't do this for the shopping, no?
No.
Just on special events.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start it up and see what it sounds like. Okay, take it away then.
Saturday, July the 30th, was a historic day for the Society, because that was when the former NCB No. 7 from Comrie Congaree hauled a passenger train under her own steam. Previously, she'd been out with No. 17, that's Strathspey Railways No. 17, Bray Riach, of course, on test, but this was the big day.
And there she goes, 75254, back in steam after 30 years. On the footplate is Mark Ashmole, and earlier he told me about the work involved in getting this engine back in steam.
Mark, you just brought No. 7 back into steam for the first time in 30 years. That's quite an achievement.
Yeah, particularly considering the condition the locomotive was in when we started in 2003. The locomotive was in a very sorry state. It had been basically run to the end of its life. Every single thing on the engine was worn out. Mechanically, it was absolutely clapped in very, very poor condition. On the locomotive, we've replaced every pin and bush and bearing on the locomotive have been replaced. It's had new tyres, new bearings. We've had to do some major work on the motion and all the running and suspension gear. A lot of the steelwork had rotted, so that's a lot of what you see of the cab and the running plates have all been replaced. And the boiler is not actually off No. 7, it's off another locomotive we've got, No. 5, but had been recently, in its working life, repaired by Andrew Barclay in Kilmarnock. Yeah, this boiler is in particularly good condition. Boiler inspector says one of the best he's seen. And we've retubed that boiler. There was some wastage in the smoke box, which we've refurbished and replaced.
Can you tell me what kept you going? I mean, 30 years is a long time to try and bring an engine back into life.
Not 30 years. It's only really been, let's say, the last 7 years
that we've actually worked. 7 years is a long time.
Indeed. It's the enjoyment that you get, the satisfaction of seeing all the hard work taking something which is fundamentally a piece of scrap basically back to as new condition.
What's it like to drive?
It sounds very good, a little bit different to what we have because of the exhaust system. It sounds a little bit different than what you're used to. But It's going to be the mainstay of our service here for the rest of this season, and will be an ideal, robust, easy to maintain locomotive for the normal service at Burness and Kinnear.
British Gypsum has helped to secure the future of the UK's growing rail heritage sector with the donation of an Andrew Barclay diesel hydraulic locomotive to the Scottish Railway Preservation Society. Last used on the company's Kirkby Thor and Cockleek site in Cumbria, the locomotive, named FGF after the then group chairman F.G. Flood, was one of three Andrew Barclay locomotives used by British Gypsum to transfer rock from the nearby gypsum mines to the company's plasterboard manufacturing plant. Kevin McCallum explains the significance of this locomotive.
Well, this locomotive was built in Scotland, and it's an example of an Andrew Barclay diesel hydraulic locomotive of a design that they produced from the 1960s through to the 1980s. It's typical of their products of that time. They were revolutionary in the 1950s in going into diesel hydraulic transmission and railway locomotives, and that became their forte until they ceased construction of locomotives in autumn winter of 2007. And that's what makes this locomotive quite important, because Andrew Barclay were still building locomotives up until 2007, one of the very last manufacturers in the country. And it's a piece of Scottish engineering history. And a lot of people concentrate in preserving steam locomotives and all the artefacts that go along with that. But we shouldn't forget the diesel locomotive or the internal combustion engine locomotive, because they've been around, made by Andrew Barclay, since 1916.
Well, I'm now on the footplate of this diesel, which has just been handed over. And with me now is Chris Britton, who is the operations manager. Chris, can you tell me something about the history of this locomotive?
Yes, this locomotive would have been used for moving rail stock, carrying raw gypsum, mined from our local mines around the Kirkby Thor and Cocklake sites in Cumbria, mainly moving rail stock around the railhead from the mines to the site where the gypsum would be processed to make the finished product. Gypsum's a natural product mined underground, very, very rich in the Cumbria area, which we use to as the raw material as the basis for most of our construction products, mainly plasters. So most of the plasters that people buy for the domestic market and plasterboard are actually formulated from raw gypsum, natural gypsum found underground.
Is there still a role for railways in your company?
Well, we moved in the early 1980s, we moved to mainly road-going logistics, but just over 3 years ago, we took the opportunity of reintroducing rail movements from our site in Cumbria up into a depot in Scotland, removing around 20 to 30 vehicle movements a day from our site, which is obviously very, very popular with the local community, and just really shows British Gypsum's position on environmental protection.
Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of this special edition of Soundblast. The roving reporter, editor, director and producer has been David Bytheway, who invites us to find out more about the Scottish Railway Preservation Society and the Bowness and Kinnear Railway at www.srps.co.uk. From me, Sandy Simpson, from David, and from everyone here in Bowness, farewell till we meet again.